soft eye contact.
How many times have you been to marriage counseling?
Marriage counseling. 10 minutes of soft eye contact, no blinking, start.
That's staring contest, Mike.
It's marriage counseling, it's different.
Do they have people do staring contests in marriage counseling?
What did I just say?
Is that a cougar fact?
It's a, no. I can't. I just blinked.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Fact Cougars podcast. We're eating... I can never remember what they're called.
They're current. My mouth is full.
We're eating currants. We're talking current events. We're talking past currents. We're talking riptides and ocean currents.
I'm Miles.
And I'm Michael.
And we are the Fact Cougars
podcast.
We planned that in advance.
What is Fact Cougars, you might be asking? Like, what does that mean? How do you put those words together?
How do you get a cougar that's a fact, or a fact that's a cougar?
And the answer is, it's a podcast.
Where the facts are cougars and the men are young.
Today is our Halloween Spooktacular Edition. On this episode of skin crawling, hair raising, just great gazongas. I'm talking a woo ga booga woo. Oh, that was a loud one. I think I clipped there. Anyway, today is the Halloween Spooktacular edition of the Fact Cougars podcast.
And we got a real pair of gazongas for you, real bazoobers. I'm talking two quizzes.
Get ready to suckle from each symmetrical teat of knowledge from mother fact. Come to prey on us young men. Okay, that one's awful.
We're back at our Virginia studio.
The place where it all began. Miles' parents' basement.
Hopefully my dad doesn't come downstairs again. That'd be really awkward because we're live.
Hopefully he does. I'm so interested in seeing Miles' dad again. Hi, Al. In case you're listening.
All right, Michael. I've come to you today.
Yeah.
With a quiz. And you've come to me today with a quiz.
Yeah, tell me your topic and we can prove that we're holding to our very spooktacular theme with terrifying, spine-tingling subjects.
You're making it sound not very scary.
Then what? Then what?
My topic, Michael.
Yeah.
Is I have some very fun, fruity questions about the black metal scene in Norway in the 90s.
I believe that that's terrifying. I believe that that is genuinely spooktacular.
A lot of them are named after Lord of the Rings characters, but we'll talk about that later.
Fucking nerds. And my subject, which is equally scary, is you social animals.
Ooh.
Evolutionary strategies. Halloween.
Hey, there's a lot of people out there who are petrified of bees. Absolutely ruined by them. By bees.
Yeah.
And wasps. I mean, who isn't scared of wasps? Honestly, I feel like one of the most primal fears somebody can experience is a large, unidentified insect flying straight at your eyes.
Yes. Yeah, eyes especially. My eyes are already so fragile.
I feel like people are so rarely attacked by things that when something so tiny goes for you, it's extra awful. And also, I'm just not used to it.
Yeah. I recently got attacked by a fox. And
wait, really?
Yeah. Like, I had to, my monkey brain kicked in. And I had a legit fight or flight. Or rather, fight and flight reflex, because I gave a little kick, but I also kicked my leg very far away from the fox and started running in the kicking motion, which is not an efficient way to start running.
Or kicking.
Or kick. So, I guess...
Did you make it out okay?
Yeah, I survived.
Did it get you at all?
No. It got kind of close to me. It just, like, charged out of the underbrush.
Oh, and they got scared.
And then I kicked and it diverted.
Okay.
I didn't make contact. I didn't land a blow.
Well, that's good. I would have been kind of sad if you punted a fox across the street.
Yeah, it's not like a blue jay that's already dead or anything.
Or a goose.
Yeah.
They just deserve it.
Any goose?
And I've never met a goose that shouldn't be punted. Go ahead, PETA. I'll give you my address.
We'll just bleep this out and pretend we said something. Okay, Miles, I think I'm going to start off with my quiz for you. Are you excited?
Oh my god. Start your quengines.
Clonk, clonk.
That was the sound of you pulling the ripcord on your quiz.
Yeah, so mine is on eusocial animals.
That sounds like a insult. You social insect.
Somewhere in there, you're making a good point, actually, which is, in fact, that not every pony knows what eusocial means, and...
Every pony, no! God, no! God, no!
So I will explain, and I will define it. Eusocial, E-U-S-O-C-I-A-L, is a... term given to animals which can be described as fitting all three of a specific set of criteria. And these have to do with how they operate in a social living environment in some very specific and very intriguing ways. So, Miles, before we get deeper into this and I spoil the answer to my question, let's go with question number one. Which of these is not one of the three necessary traits for defining eusocial animals? Is it A division of labor, B, an overlap in generations in one living quarters, C, is there a demonstrated hive mind or flocking behavior, or D, is it cooperative brood care?
Ooh, Michael. I don't know.
Which could it possibly be, Miles?
I'm gonna go... Not remembering what the letters correspond to. I'll give you a gentle B.
That would be an overlap in generations. And that is not correct. That is actually one of the criteria necessary for defining eusocial animals. No. Isn't that a shock to you specifically, Miles? Who
wow.
Have never heard this question before. Like
golly.
When we were not recording earlier and thought we were. The actual answer is C, they've demonstrated a hive mind or flocking behavior. I just made that up because it sounded kind of funky dunky, but that's actually not necessary for being considered a eusocial animal. So let's go through these criteria and give a little more depth on them.
Lay it on me, like a smear of honey on a friend.
Open-faced honey schmear sandwich on friend bread. Anywho, let's start with division of labor. This is a kind of thing where animals are not generalized. They are not individual generalists, where they will perform all of the functions of an organism as we think about. So... to go to the example of a bear will forage for itself, it will hunt, it will mate, it will sometimes split along the sexual dimorphic split, so males versus females, they will raise young, irrespective of sex, they will be raised by another animal. So that's what a generalist would do. Now, eusocial animals are not that. They have specialized within one species into specific biologically distinct roles apart from sex. So these are things like being a worker bee or a queen bee or a drone. And then sometimes the division of labor is broken down even finer among those categories based on how much food they were given to eat as little babies.
Just like people in real life.
That's bad. That's a bad one. Anyway, we can get more into that in a little bit. One of my other questions is about that specifically, if you like the idea of little baby bees getting something to eat.
No, I'm enamored with the idea of little baby bees getting fed.
Yeah, in their little honeycomb pocket.
Do they eat the honey?
Is it that they feed honey to the little baby bees? The, like, larva pupa? I should have looked this up. I don't know.
I'm checking. Yes. They do eat honey. It's food for the winter.
Preserves.
Bees.
Bees are the best.
Bees are the best.
Anyway, our next criterion is an overlap in generations within one living space. So that would be like grandparents and parents and children, and sometimes like great-grandchildren and even more, all cohabitating and sharing one unit of that species' society. As opposed to what's an animal? Oh, a bear, perhaps?
A bear. Maybe this is secretly the bear episode of Fact Checkers.
The scariest, the most dangerous game.
Oh, bear.
Yes, so bears, you will imagine, like the unit of bear society. Is like a mother and two cubs, and that's about it, right? Like, they don't live in multi-generational homes. They rear young for a bit, and
they've
then
got, like, a trailer kind of situation.
Yeah.
Like a single family unit.
Right, standalone.
Bears ruined Los Angeles.
They really did.
With their single family zoning. And
not a bear duplex in sight.
Not a single aspect of mixed use zoning.
Mm-mm.
They also got the big claws. It makes it hard to go downtown.
But you social animals don't do that. They ride public transit. So our third criterion is...
Bum-tots.
What?
Actually, no, it would be numtobs. Do you know the numtot Facebook page?
Mm-mm.
It's like something... It's for transit-oriented teens. That's what the tot and numtot stands for. Except it's transit-oriented bears, so it's numtobs.
Oh, it's something memes, right?
Yeah. For transit-oriented teens. Teens.
Teens. Bears.
After this, we could put on some teen bear.
Mmm. Smells like teen bear spirit. Our last criterion of being a eusocial animal is cooperative brood care. So that's where animals will take care of other young that are not their own direct offspring. And now this is a viable genetic strat because in a eusocial, most eusocial societies have developed a single, essentially a queen, who is the mother of all of the other young. in the society. And that means they're all related. And so taking care of your siblings is actually a great, super effective strategy, genetic success. So this, what would otherwise look like, you know, some kind of counterintuitive altruism, is actually almost selfish if we look at it from genetic selection standpoint rather than the perspective of the individual. So let's go to our second question. Miles, knowing what you know now about the definition of eusocial animals, do you think humans count as eusocial?
Well, I imagine they could if they felt like it. Like, if we just started to go, like, do a collectivist farm kind of deal and share a wife.
Polyamorists, are you social? Send tweet.
Oh my god. Maybe they're more valid.
Yeah. Even more than we thought. Even more than us.
I don't know. Do you want like a yes or a no? Because I don't know if I can give you a yes or a no.
There really isn't a yes or no answer, so you're basically correct. There is a little bit of scientific dispute. First, in how strictly we define eusocial animals. So are these animals which strictly meet these three criteria? Defining the division of labor as a biological difference from birth or before the period of sexual maturity, which humans would not meet because we don't we aren't specialized for jobs.
Yeah.
When we're little babies, and then that changes, and then we specialize physically and biologically.
Yeah. So it's like it's
as
kind
we
of
age.
A...
This isn't the 19th century anymore. There's not little kids going into little English coal mines to get the little bricks.
Crawling into the weaving machines because they're the only ones who
yes.
can fit. It's kind of like a platypus problem, almost.
Explain.
So, well, I mean, it's more of the limitations of trying to categorize nature.
Right.
Where, at, like, when the platypus first hit the scene, you know... People were like, is this a mammal? What is it? It lays eggs. It doesn't really have nipples. They've got milk patches that ooze. It's got a duck bill. It swims.
It's venomous.
It's so people were like, this doesn't really fit the mammal class, the mammal classification.
Yeah.
And that's also partially because the mammal classification is made up and doesn't actually have any
is that at real... the family level? Is it family mammalia? I don't remember where in the taxonomy it is.
Oh god, it's high.
Yeah.
It's high, because that'd be Animalia.
Kingdom Animalia, phylum Chordata, class. I used to know this.
Order, family, genus, species is though. But anyhow, like, the words we use to describe things are just a way for us to interpret the world. And more often than not, these kind of scientific classifications are describing observational similarities rather than rigid actualized rules of nature, right?
Yeah. Which is pretty accurate.
And so eventually they decided that platypuses were mammals for the sake of convenience.
Yeah, and it's a little bit more like the scientific attitude changed to where they stopped classifying animals based on what they did, but what they are. So it's genetic similarity and branching in the evolutionary history. By the way, I found it just for our completionists, myself included. It's Kingdom Animalia, Phylum Chordata, Class Mammalia, Order Primate, Suborder Haplorini, Infraorder Simiiformis. I don't remember Infraorder. Kingdom, Phylum, Class, Order, Family, Genus, Species is what I remember. And then from Infra, Order, Family, Subfamily, Tribe, it's all Hominid, Hominini, Homo, and then Sapiens. Anyway.
Hey, band name? Hominid, Hominini, Homo.
That's one of the most objectively least good band names we've suggested. There's like a community rap about, or like in the show community, they rap about the taxonomy of Homo sapiens. Anyway, okay, hot take. Howler monkey hot take. coconuts are mammals. Discuss.
They give milk.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't really give live birth.
It's actually not because of the milk and hair. It's because they're monotremes.
What? What is a monotreme?
Okay, so they're not. That's a joke on classifying the platypus, which is a monotreme. It's something to do with how it reproduces and, like...
Were you trying to make a mono-tree pun?
What?
Is that your plan?
No. Like,
coconuts are mono trees.
They're mono trees. Wow. That is the most useless joke. You couldn't tell that to anyone else ever. It's funny. It is useless. So, back to our question a long time ago. Scientists are split on whether division of labor is something that is, like, determined from birth or very, very young age in animals, or if it can change, or if it's even, like, manifested biologically in the first place. Because if we counted division of labor as just a societal construct rather than something that manifests physically, we could make the argument that humans fit all three of these because, you know, we specialize. Even thousands of years ago, people were specializing at least into farming versus royalty and sapping the being parasites on the working class, even thousands and thousands of years ago. So there's a decent argument for that. Eat the rich, please. We also overlap in generations. Grandparents are a feature in a lot of human family units and whatnot, and they have been across cultures and across time. And also, people are known to take care of young that aren't theirs. It's not the single most common strategy for rearing young, is taking care of other people's young, but it is common. We see it plenty with aunts and uncles and older siblings and whatever. And, you know, we're such complex society creatures that we fit all of those to some degree, at least. Delightfully, also, if we're leaving the definition of division of labor this loose, you can count elephants as somewhat eusocial, and they are just wonderful animals. So
it kind of makes me wish that swarming behavior was an actual definition, just for the visual of
elephant swarm. Elephant flocking behavior.
Elephant hive mind.
Okay. Miles, here's question number three. Which of these is a real trait that some eusocial animals have evolved? Is it A, gun? B, wheels. See? Bones are their money. D, unique along with humans' sweat.
No.
Gun, wheels, bones are their money, sweat.
I know that. I know for a fact that humans are not the only animals that sweat. Specifically, humans sweat mostly water. Which is why it's an adaptational advantage that we sweat that way. It's one of the things that lets us be distance runners and be active during the day, is we sweat, and that sweat evaporates extraordinarily quickly. Hippos also sweat, but they sweat, like, really oily.
Sludge.
Yeah.
Sunblock.
And so it's that coupled with the fact that all of our internal organs don't slam into our lungs whenever we run. As well as our upright posture that lets us... Oh, and ginormous asses. Our butts are so big.
Ooh. Like a corgi.
In terms of primates, we got dump trucks. And all of those let us run efficiently, so it can't be D.
Hell yeah.
I don't think bones are their money. Worms might be their dollars. I'm tempted to say wheel.
That, I've tricked you. You sniffed out the really obvious wrong answers. Yeah, people are not the only things that sweat. And also, bones are not their money. Skeletons are not eusocial insects. Now, exoskeletons.
Hey!
Anyway, wheels have not been evolved by other animals because, well, there's a little bit of speculation on this. It's like, it's just not advantageous enough to develop roads, which are pretty necessary for wheels to be a worthwhile evolutionary investment that would actually manifest. The right answer is gun.
Excuse me?
The gun. evolutionary oddity. Gun. we have not so far talked about the fruits of the sea. Yes, seafood sometimes are also known to be eusocial animals.
Interesting.
Shrimp.
Oh, the mantis shrimp?
Snapping shrimp. The very famous mantis shrimp is the one that can, like, create a bubble that...
Cavitation bubbles.
Is, like, the temperature of the sun or something for, like, an 800th of a second or something stupid like that. That's a very famous example. But they're not the only animals with guns, and these snapping shrimp, Cynalpheus regalis... which I will just be calling snapping shrimp, but there are many kinds of snapping shrimp. I'm just going to be calling this by the non-scientific name right now, and that's what I mean. Base is covered, back scratched. These guys use their guns in the most surreal way. Okay, these guys live in the Western Atlantic in... sea sponges. They're very small, and they crawl into little canals in sea sponges of particular species, and they habitate in there, and they create nests, and they have little pods of shrimps, and they are like separate social units from other nests of the same species. So, like, there is extreme competition for individual sponges.
Yeah.
Like, scientists took a survey of sponges in this habitat. I think it was near Belize, but don't quote me on that. And they found that over 90% of all sponges had shrimps living in them, which means it's extremely competitive. of all of these sponges had shrimp in them. Which means they are competing like crazy for these things. So they're highly territorial, including being aggressive, to the extent of being aggressive against other of their own species of snapping wow. shrimp. So they do specialize polymorphically. So there's a great big queen who has lots of babies, and then there are a bunch of smaller, up to like 300 or so of these little wow. dudes living in one nest. And
living in one sponge.
What, some of them will be little small like manlets, and they will be
little beta shrimp.
Little betas. They are non-reproducers, even if they're not technically sterile. And then there are bigger boys who are the specifically defending kinds of shrimp. You'll see this with like soldier ants as well.
Yeah.
So a similar kind of construct. The big boys will have big claws, but they all have the gun claw. And they operate the same way, where they will, like,
it's open pop carry a little bubble. In Belize.
These canals in the sponges are super small.
Yeah.
So predators have a hard time getting in there.
Do they, like, dig canals in the sponges?
I think they just inhabit, like, naturally forming ridges in the sponges.
Okay.
I'm not sure, though. I haven't seen that one way or the other. Maybe we can find out later, and I will get an answer for you. So, these guys are a great example of the two main modes of eusocial habitation. There are life insurers, which are groups of animals, you might say, like, whose main benefit is that they protect each other by being in a large group.
Or paying towards, like, a collective policy that in the event of one of their deaths...
Yes.
It pays out.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah, I almost thought... I thought you were actually going to say something real there, and I was genuinely
sorry.
Agreeing. So, yeah, they are life insurers, is what they're called, and they contribute toward a guarantee that total reproductive failure of the species will not happen, because they're pooling resources and raising others guaranteeing that their genes will live on and the others of the same species
shrimp
will live.
Shrimp nation.
These are not that kind, even. They're what's called fortress defenders.
Oh!
And these kinds of eusocial animals benefit each other by collectively defending an extremely valuable resource. Now, some animals can build their own nests, like paper wasps or bees or whatever, but some of them don't, like the snapping shrimp, and they have to find a sponge for all of them to live in. And there's extremely high competition for them because they need it so bad. So,
yeah.
They have developed absurd defense techniques. When an intruder of some kind, either another shrimp or like a predator, tries to enter, imagine you're walking down a corridor and
yeah.
you turn and you see a doorway and you step through the doorway, and all of a sudden everyone in the room turns to you and gives you a little warning snip. They give a warning snip. They go, and then if the intruder doesn't leave, or this Wikipedia article said if they get stuck in the cavern, so like, let's say you tried, I tried to leave the snapping shrimp sponge, but I'm dummy thick and the breadth of my hips keeps getting caught in the narrow canals.
I'm light bulb shaped, so can only go in one way. Fun fact, you can fit a light bulb in your mouth, but you can't fit it out. You have to go to the hospital. I'm serious, don't put a light bulb in your mouth.
Delightful.
It will get stuck.
Delightful.
Or you'll just break it on the way out, and that just sounds... Would you, do you want a mouth full of broken glass and light bulb parts? I'm sorry, please continue.
So, if the intruder doesn't leave, they will coordinate a big, giant, single snap of their gun claw. They will synchronize and kill the thing. So, like, sometimes they will just, like, snap randomly and just, like, aggressively at you. They'll go... Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they all decide at one point that that's it. You've been here long enough and you're not leaving. And you're fucking dead because of a shrimp gun. And they synchronize and snap together simultaneously, killing the intruder.
This sounds like the world's best production of Grease.
Banana, banana, banana. Wait, that's West Side Story.
Hey, this could be West Side Story too, but it's the opening number and you kill the whole audience with the force of your snap.
The snapping shrimp is known for its theatrical prowess as well.
They're all
especially stage decoration. Okay, that's enough of our shrimp. They have guns. Miles, let's talk about bees again. I said we would talk about bees. Let's talk about bees.
Talk about bees.
Question four. What do the fattest bees in the hive do? We mentioned earlier that they get fed when they're little babies, and the amount of food they're fed determines their role later in life because they will grow to different sizes. What do the fattest bees in the hive do? Is it A, be submissive and breedable? B, C, forage for nectars and saps? D, sting? Did you like B? Was it a B pun?
I'm gonna go with C.
It is. It is. They go out and they get foods. Apparently, it's like they trust them because they're like, oh, they're fat. They love food. They know what the best food is. That's just me projecting on them. But that's what I like to think. It's like, ooh, the fat little bees. They know what food is best because they love food.
That's all they...
The gluttons.
They fucking did.
Yeah. Yeah, they go out and they will get nectar and food for the hive to consume. And the little ones, here is another really cool thing. Some very small bees will act as air circulation. They will stand near the entrance and exit, and they will flap their wings, coordinating with each other, to get a breeze going. They will circulate air through their nest.
My God, I didn't eat enough, and now I have to be a fan for the rest of my family.
Isn't that kind of baller?
That is super baller. How much do you have to eat to do that?
It's probably a different of, like, two little drops, because bees are very small when they're babies.
Okay, so in order to be a baller, it's not, like, a lot more.
But, like, respective to body mass, it's a ton.
Okay.
Imagine eating, like, The Rock for, or Dwayne the Roblox Johnson for, like, a month. That's the difference, I guess, in human terms. Are you ready for question five?
Yes.
I, as in A-Y. A-Y-E. Okay. This is a little bit about something that I don't know anything about. Network theory? Complicated. I don't understand it. But people who are smarter than me about this thing really understand it. And I'm saying what they said, or at least what I think they said. So, network theory and eusocial animals are apparently in an arms race, and the animals are winning. Animals are better than humans at organizing things that we try to do in society. Like, we see examples of this all the time.
Yeah.
And they do things that they have been doing things that resemble structures that we have only invented ourselves in the past 100 years, 50 years, 10 years. Like, complicated things on the forefront of technological innovation.
Fascinating.
We see analogs of these in insect behavior, which is absurd. They're smarter than us. Which of these structures have eusocial animals been observed performing an analogous behavior to or outperforming people at? A. Lungs. B. Search engines. C. Automated delivery fulfillment center robot coordination. D. The free market distributing labor.
I'm gonna go with C.
You are correct. You would have been right if you said any of them, because they're all true.
Oh my god!
Termites will exchange gases like lungs in their termite mounds. Efficiently, literally like lungs. Ants have been observed when trying to choose a new nest site, collecting and sifting through information as efficiently as search engines like Google.
That's crazy.
On the internet. Yes, robots, like robot coordination, like we see in some of the most technologically advanced, like order fulfillment centers. Tom Scott had a really good video about one of these places recently where it's like not really useful to try to determine whether it's a collection of many robots or one giant robot coordinating yeah. all of it, because it's kind of both, and it's kind of neither.
Yeah.
Whether they're all autonomous, communicating with the central hub, or if the central hub is communicating and ordering all of the individual little robots to move different places and not collide with each other. Insects do that. They communicate information through hub insects who will have more connections than others to other insects.
That's insane.
And it will spread effectively, like information one ant will know can spread to the other side of the nest extremely quickly, or other animals will be able to use that information without knowing that information in the first place. They'll be able to make decisions based on information found out scavenging, because the information got passed down the line back to the nest, and they will only have the information that they need
yeah.
to decide what they're going to do at home. Coordinating across distance at a really sophisticated level. And also, eusocial animals distribute labor not necessarily more ethically, because that's not an objective measure, but definitely more efficiently than markets do, and better than most human methods of distributing labor. They get more done per animal.
That's not surprising. Only in the sense that I'm thinking about it, and I don't think ants, like, fight. Like, they don't argue with each other, right?
I actually don't know if they, like, argue between each other.
Yeah.
There is a mechanism of decision-making where, which might take the ability to argue out of it because it's biological. So, like, different animals will have, or different individuals will have different thresholds for saturation of a pheromone in the area.
Yeah.
And when enough of them have reached that threshold, because a sufficient amount of that pheromone has been detected,
yeah.
The group will act, because enough of them have individually their switch has been flipped, and that counts as a group decision. So, like, if you have a greater tolerance for the existence of Cheetos in the room, but I have, like, no tolerance for it, and I'm like, I gotta fucking have those in my mouth.
Yeah.
And let's say we have a third person, and they're somewhere between us, the amount of Cheetos in the room only has to be greater by one individual puff than our middle friend needs to decide that they want to have them. And we will all eat. We will feast. So arguing, I guess, sometimes is not relevant, because that's how decisions aren't made, based on those kinds of factors that we would argue about.
This reminds me a lot of a science fiction book that I literally just read, like, 2-3 weeks ago, called Children of Time. And it's about this society of hyper-intelligent spiders. Anyway, kind of besides the point, but one of the things that the spiders do is program ant colonies using pheromones and use them as massive biological computers.
Wow.
And so there is, at the end of the book, an artificial intelligence uploaded to an ant colony.
That's an amazing thing to say. I'm glad I heard that.
Yeah, neat book. And it was very, very
an AI program uploaded to an ant colony. That's astounding.
It was quite good. Quite good.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, the ants were, like, special. The premise is that there is this evolutionary virus that was supposed to make primates smarter, that then infected the entire native bug population, and and it just happened that this one group of spiders was a good fit and started getting smart in a different way than humans, but they started to get smarter progressively, and the same thing kind of infected the ants anyway. So the ants were specifically good at computing.
That's astounding.
But I thought it was neat, and it's...
And also, we see ants are kind of good at computing anyway.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Dude, you social animals, doing all this reading about them, I've just grown to appreciate them so much.
Yeah, it's not something that I ever thought about, I'll be honest. But it is incredibly cool.
Shrimp guns. It's okay, you know, like, spontaneous synchronization sometimes, like you'll see like 3 clocks on a skateboard or 3 metronomes on a skateboard all ticking out of sync, and then they just line up and they're going the same amount. I imagine the shrimp all doing that, they're going like, and then you're dead. What a way to go. Anyway, you got 3 questions right. Congratulations. That's a good score.
Thank you. All right. And thank you so much for that dilucious quiz, Michael.
Dilucious. Ooh, I hope you enjoyed it.
Once again, proving that it's not necessarily fear of the unknown that we're scared of, but fear of things that do stuff better than we do. Happy Halloween, everybody. All right, Michael.
Bears.
Are you ready?
I'm very ready. I want to pee first.
All right, Michael. How was your piss? How was it?
Oh, spooky, don't you know?
Well, speaking of spooky, I've got a far less complicated set of questions for you, Michael. So how familiar are you with the various genres of metal?
Despite being an absolute music obsessive, I know very little about metal in general. So pretty little.
All right, well,
pretty minimal.
Unfortunately, this is not really going to be about the music, because I'll be honest, It's not really my cup of tea. And there's absolutely no way I could fit five questions about... I mean, I could fit five questions about metal genres, but it would make me a worse person to do so. So I'm instead going to give you some history, specifically about the band Mayhem.
Okay.
Mayhem was a band that came around in the early 90s in Norway. And it's formed by a collection of incredibly, incredibly strange and disturbed people.
For a Halloween spooktacular.
Oh, absolutely. They're said to have been pretty influential in terms of developing the genre of black metal in the 80s. What I've read is that the shift was from just heavy metal bands with satanic lyrics to people who were very committed to the bit, and they get more symphonic, but they also get more literal with what they do. There's this big emphasis on, and I will forewarn you that I'm going to butcher every single possible Norwegian pronunciation.
Hell yeah, they deserve it.
They do have a single vowel sound. That's not true. But all of their words lack more vowels than I'm used to.
Mm.
So they have a wholehearted emphasis on being terve, or committed, true.
Okay.
Right? Musical integrity was of the utmost importance to these people.
Yeah.
Specifically, I mean, all metal fans. I feel like that's a stereotype. But these guys, Michael, I'm telling you, were absolutely nuts. And here's some of the shit that they did in the name of black metal.
I'm excited.
Our first question. In order to secure his place as the front man of the band Mayhem, what did vocalist Per Yngve Olin send to each of the members? Was it A, one whole naked woman per person? B, a crucified mouse each? C, frighteningly realistic simulacra of the band Kiss with real hair and teeth? Or D, small personalized sperm jars?
I kept waiting for them to get like, oh, that'll be the real one. They didn't get more realistic or convincing with each pass. Oh. Great use of the word simulacra, by the way.
Thank you. It's one of my favorite words.
10 out of 10.
Do I get an extra point?
We'll see. You get tiebreaker. I don't think Kiss is real enough black metal for that to be like really worth the like cachet. So
my intention with the word simulacra was also to imply that it's like a voodoo-esque kind of doll.
Ah. I hope it's the crucified mice. That's I don't believe it, but that's my guess.
Michael, dissatisfied with the prospects of the band that he had just founded, called Morbid, Per Yngve Olin, also known as Dead, they all have like code names, by the way, initially sent the band members a small parcel containing a demo tape, a letter detailing his ideas for the future, and a real crucified mouse.
Hell yes! That's hardcore!
Yeah.
What?
These guys were insane. I need to pull up. Also, I need to give you all of the names real quick.
So in the band, we have Dead trying to be the singer.
So he's the front man, right? At least in the very, very early periods. Because it's actually, they are, I believe, still making music to this day.
Wow.
So it was founded in 1984 by Øystein Erseth, known initially as Destructor, but as we keep talking, he's known as Euronymous. the bassist Jorn Stubbard, who went by Necro Butcher. And then they also, extra notable band member is Count Grishnach, whose real name is Varg Vikernes.
That's a lot less threatening.
Well, Grishnach is a character from Lord of the Rings. It's the orc who says, "Look like meat's back on the menu, boys."
I didn't know he had a name.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's Grishnach. There's also Hellhammer, Maniac, Blasphemer, Telach. They all have code names, not just in Mayhem. We'll get to some fun ones later. Anyhow, let's move on to our next question. Guitarist of the band Mayhem, who went by Euronymous, allegedly did what with the corpse of former band member Per Yngve Olin, who went by Dead?
Died? The corpse of Dead, so...
Yes.
Dead died.
Yes.
We're glossing over that much.
He, A, made him into album art. B, used the body as a meat puppet for a live performance. C, fava beans and a nice Chianti. Or D, ritualistic butchering to stop his girlfriend from leaving.
Oh, I was for sure sold on eating him, but the butchering for, like, magic is a little more attractive even. Do I get to know how he died?
It was a suicide.
That's one of the less funny ways he could have died.
Yeah, it is a bummer.
That is very sad. Ate him. I think he ate him.
Unfortunately, it is A. Euronymous used photos of the body as album art for a bootleg album, and is also to have allegedly, or he claimed to have taken parts of his skull and given it to other people as necklaces.
Oh my god.
That like showed him favor.
Okay, I've heard of that. The sharing of the skull fragments as gifts.
It caused
I've heard of that before.
The bassist to basically leave the band because he was like, this is like our friend, and
that's the line.
Necro Butcher basically had a huge falling out with Euronymous over the whole treatment of Dead.
That's one of the most absurd sentences, like single sentences, I've ever heard. So Necro Butcher.
It would be funny if it weren't so sad.
Yeah. That's tragic.
Of course, it's not even the craziest thing, Michael. So, on to our third question.
Suck it to me.
Members of the media often accused members of the scene, specifically those who frequent the shop Helvet, which was owned and operated by Euronymous. They were known as, by the way, the Black Metal Inner Circle.
Ooh.
So the media often accused them of being militant satanic terrorists. What, if anything, did they actually do? Was it A, flash local news broadcasts? B, burn down or attempt to burn down 28 different churches across Norway and Sweden? C, attempt to coat an entire street in pig's blood? Or D, devil cookies for sale?
I'm split between the churches burning or the cookies. I bet it's the cookies.
No, they burned down a bunch of churches. Several of the unburned churches are album covers before they took pictures, before they burned them down, and then used it as album art.
That's astounding.
And they were all also absolutely beautiful churches. They're all like old wood. No, it's a real, I mean.
That's a tragedy. I really love buildings
These guys, it is important to note, and we'll get into this later, were gigantic pieces of shit. They all suck, and that was their goal. That was like, in order to be like true Satanists.
What's the word for it? The
terva.
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 Terva. I am really bad at rolling R's in the middle of words.
I can't roll an R at all, so I just said
really?
Terva.
Ahriba.
Ahriba.
That's not Norwegian. But yeah, no, so they attempted to slash successfully burn down about 28 different churches. Members of the scene are split as to whether these actions were committed to just be as provocative as possible. Provocative seems like too shallow of a word, or out of an actual hatred of Christianity. Some of them claim to be, you know, neo-pagans, like real proper Satanists and the like. Notably, the drummer of Mayhem claims to have called for attacks on mosques and Hindu temples as well, because he was a white nationalist and he thought they were more.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Guys.
All right. So question four is a bit more of a lighthearted question. And this applies to a little bit past the borders of Norway, including Sweden, for which the scenes actually had a very intense rivalry. Ooh. The Finns hated the Norwegians in the black metal scene. But anyway.
Wait, who's involved? The Finns?
The Finns, the Swedes, and the Norwegians.
Wow.
There's like, they're kind of, the black metal scenes are a little bit connected.
Okay.
In the sense that they hated each other's guts. So, Michael, which one of these is a real frontman name? Is it A, Sarumaniac? B, Impaled Nazarene? C, Nuclear Holocausto? Or D, Biggith Faust?
Biggith Faust. That sounds the most realistic.
It's Nuclear Holocausto, baby. Nuclear Holocausto was the frontman of Finnish black metal band Beherit, which is Syriac for Satan. Syriac, which I didn't know what it was, so I had to look it up, is a dialect of Aramaic that emerged out of Syria in the first century. Other band members of Beherit include Black Jesus, Sodomatic Slaughter, Abyss, Necroperverser, and Ancient Corpse Desecrator, spelled with a K. Beherit is also still active under Spine Farm Records.
Spine Farm. That's kind of sweet.
Now, Michael, we come to our last and final question.
Wow.
After being arrested for the murder of fellow band member Euronymous, what did bassist Varg Vikernes claim the 150 kilograms of explosives and 300 rounds of ammunition in his house were for?
Wait, so Euronymous died too?
Yeah, Euronymous was stabbed to death by Varg Vikernes over an alleged dispute. There's a lot of different claims, basically, as to why he did it. So Varg Vikernes claims that he killed Euronymous because Euronymous had sent him a death threat and had heard from one of their mutual friends that he was planning on ambushing him at his, that Euronymous was going to ambush him. And so Varg Vikernes was like, I gotta strike first.
These are bandmates.
Yes.
And they want to kill each other.
Yes. The former bassist Necro Butcher claimed that they sent each other death threats all of the time, and it was just like part of the thing. And so it was clear that Varg Vikernes just wanted to kill Euronymous. That's from Necro Butcher's point of view. And then some additionally, Euronymous is said to have owed Varg a bunch of money because he hadn't paid him some royalty money.
Ooh.
So on and so forth. So it's muddy as to the actual reason as to why. But he, Euronymous was found, like, being stabbed a bunch of times, like, 3 times in the front and, like, 20 or so times in the back.
Also hardcore.
So anyway, Fogg Buchanan's got arrested, and they found 150 kilograms of explosives and 3,000 rounds of ammunition in his house. Now, what were they for? Was it A, to blow up the Blitz House, a leftist anarchist enclave in Oslo? B, a one-use instrument for his next album? C, in order to, quote, defend Norway if we were attacked at any time, unquote? Or D, plastic explosives, more like polymer clay for his figurines?
I mean, it's probably the anarchist house. I'm gonna guess the Blitz house.
So Varg Vikernes was and continues to be a crazy person.
Okay.
In court, he claimed that they were there, that he had them in order to defend Norway if we were attacked at any time. Here are some of the things that Varg Vikernes believes. So he, Vikernes promoted views which combined Odinism and esoteric Nazism, which is the occult Nazi stuff that's often used in conspiracy theories and stuff. He is described as an idol for skinheads with an inclination towards paganism, and for contemporary pagans with an inclination towards National Socialism. Since the late 1990s, he has described his views as odalism, which he says encompasses paganism, traditional nationalism, racialism, and environmentalism.
That doesn't pass the DILF inspection.
He advocates social conservatism, simple living, and self-sufficiency. He wants to return to monkey.
Reject modernity. Return to monk.
He also rallies against a perceived international Jewish conspiracy to destroy the traditional European identity.
Of course.
Vikernes wrote that he had many differences with others in the black metal scene from the beginning. They did not care for his political opinions or rifle collection. Is a real quote that I found. And he recently got out of prison and lives in, like, the wilderness with his wife and allegedly 7 children.
I like that that's not a fixed number.
Yeah.
We're
well,
not sure.
Nobody knows how many kids he has, just how many he said he's had on Twitter.
What a freak.
Right? No, these people were all insane. And I learned all of this and I decided not to listen to any of their music.
If you do listen to any of them, our dear listeners, pirate their music. This is not legal advice.
Yeah, I mean,
don't give them your money if you can avoid it.
I believe the only... They literally just released an EP last month, July 9th, 2021.
Awful. I can't wait to never listen to it.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, who is on it? There's a few original members that are on it as well. Yeah. Necro Butcher is on it. And Hellhammer as well. Yeah.
I totally love their naming scheme. Like, with the code names. Like, that must be how they're all credited on the album jacket, right? Maybe that's why they had, like, royalty disputes, because nobody could figure out who the fuck they actually were. Like, mail them their checks.
I think one of the funny things about, specifically going back to that Finnish band with all of the names, is that to them, Black Jesus means a totally different thing to us.
Yeah, I was shocked by that. Like, Black Santa.
they mean black as in, like, dark black metal.
Uh-huh.
Not like Black Jesus.
Not like regular Jesus. Or Middle Eastern Jesus. I'm spooked. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling so spooked right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to sneak in all the little deaths. Yeah, I mean, really, they're only well known for that specific thing. And that specific thing being murder and arson.
I'm also, I think I might lift from their, like, playbook the concept of sending letters of intent. I want to send a cover letter to all of my bandmates, like, hey guys, here's what's gonna happen. Also, I made you a little treat. It's a mouse.
I put a lot of effort into the band Kiss, and here's a member.
I'm impressing you with the word simulacra. Don't you like my impressive vocabulary? Don't you want me in your band?
Are you threatening me?
I'm sending you one of our playful death threats.
That we just do between pals.
Guys, we just do it. We're just boys being guys hanging around and sending death threats. It's nothing of a deal.
It's the absolute classic boys being boys, and one of them actually killed another one.
Well, you know what they say.
Someday you'll wake up and you'll see me standing over your bed, Michael.
Aw.
And then I'll get in and we'll cuddle.
What if we, instead of sending death threats platonically, we sent, like, love threats or, like, love declarations?
We just sent, like, love letters?
Yeah.
I'm gonna James Joyce that motherfucker up.
Yeah, like, what if we were just, like, Victorian gentlemen, very close, same-sex friends who had an undying love and respect and appreciation for
and
each other.
And also sent each other letters, like James Joyce, that said things like, I'm gonna smell your farts. I can't wait to smell your farts.
Also, James Joyce was gay? No, I'm thinking
he was actually really in love with this woman.
Okay.
And that's why he kept sending her letters about smelling.
That was all. It was just freaky.
He was just really into farts. And that's okay.
The Irish really are the saviors of Western civilization.
Truly. All right, everybody.
Thank you so much for listening. We're back. We'll have more for you in the future. We aren't dead.
We're just tired. I'm Miles.
And I'm Michael.
Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Cougars Fact.
Yeah, tweet at us if you like. That's where we'll probably publish our updates and corrections and other Twitterings. So if you really want, you can keep up with us there.
But also, we're on Spotify. Like us on Spotify. Follow us on Spotify. Follow us anywhere you can. If you see us in a grocery store, if I grab a watermelon, bully me. I don't need more watermelon. I can eat a whole watermelon myself.
You shouldn't. Your stomach, Miles.
It'll hurt my little tummy.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye!
You've been delightful and so spooky. Hear you next time.